Welcome to this Uretina Independent Medical Education Podcast, supported by Roche and Apellis. This two-part series on the diagnosis and treatment of geographic atrophy is presented by Professor Frank G. Holtz, Chairman of the Ophthalmology Department at the University of Bonn, and Professor Adnan Tufail of Moorfields Eye Hospital in London. In this episode, their discussion turns to emerging treatment options. They discuss the role of the complement system, how emerging treatments inhibit this pathway to influence disease progression, treatment administration and frequency, and patient selection. They also cover other promising treatment approaches, discussing these with patients, and how we evaluate our outcomes between structural and functional endpoints. There's a lot to learn in a few minutes, so without further ado, we will hand over the discussion to Professor Holtz and Professor Tufail.
Welcome to the Uretina IME video interviews on dry AMD. My name is Frank Holtz. I'm a retina specialist at the University Hospital in Bonn, Germany. And today I'm joined by Professor Adnan Tufail from Moorfields Eye Hospital in London in the UK. Hi, Adnan. How are you doing?
Great. Hi, Frank.
So the two of us will be discussing consideration both for diagnostic measures of dry AMD and also how to evaluate and assess risks for disease progression over time to the late stage atrophic age-related macular disease, as well as now emerging treatment options. So Adnan, you mentioned emerging therapies, one of them just recently approved in the US. What is the role actually of the complement system in AMD, maybe in general and more specifically in geographic atrophy?
So we've known for over 15 years that genetic variants in the complement system, initially found to be the alternative pathway of the complement system in complement factor H, are associated with increased risk of incident age-related macular degeneration. And subsequent to that, a number of other variants in the complement system have been associated with it, with incident AMD, some of which strongly with early onset AMD. In histopathology, from Greg Hageman's work and others, we've seen complement deposition around the drusen. And we see in many patients, even those without some of the key complement genetic variants, have systemic complement activation. Through multiple areas of knowledge, complement is an association and probably an important driver in the process. We even see drusen in teenagers and 20-year-olds who have a different sort of variant in their alternative pathway in mesangiocapillary glomerulonephritis. So another supportive reason of how the complement system plays a role in age-related macular degeneration.
So with these emerging treatments, what would be their role in impacting the disease progression when geographic atrophy is already present?
So we know the results of the clinical trials reduce the rate of expansion significantly compared to the sham arm in the two phase three trials for different compounds, one inhibiting C5 and one inhibiting C3. And both were statistically significant. So although they will not repair the area of atrophy, they will reduce the expansion rate and hopefully preserve vision if treated at the right time for as much of the patient's life as possible.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the pivotal trials for these two agents. What was the route of administration and what is the typical frequency of administration?
In the trials of the different compounds, in one of the trials, the intervention in the first year was given either monthly or every 2 months. And in the other trial, it was given monthly in a phase three trial. And these were given as intravitreal injections in the way we are currently very used to giving anti-VEGF injections, but with a slightly greater volume.
So Adnan, in your view, what would be the ideal patient that you would initiate such a treatment?
I think the patients who will be most keen on having the therapy and that we would probably most feel comfortable giving it to it until we get a experience with these exciting new interventions is one patient who've already probably lost one eye from atrophic AMD. When I mean lost, it's evolved their fovea and had a decrease in vision, and they probably have progressively enlarging extraorbital atrophy in their fellow eye. Another group may be patients who've got extraorbital atrophy with a strong family history of atrophic AMD, where they've got close family members who've lost significant visual function from that.
Mm-hmm. So beyond the complement inhibition mode of action, do you see other emerging treatment approaches as a silver lining on the horizon for our patients?
So apart from intravitreal anti-VEGF injection, I think given the potential burden of treatment, all exciting as it is, just like anti-VEGF, we'll be looking for longer acting therapies. So potentially giving this in a gene therapy approach, there are several trials on that. But apart from complement, there are other quite different approaches, such as those that involve intervening with the mitochondrial system. So one of the areas of great interest is primary aging, and mitochondria may be important in primary aging and the RPE. So there are drugs that affect that. There are other approaches that may affect the buildup of reactive bisretinoids that are byproducts of the visual cycle, that's deuterated vitamin A. And then RPE stem cell approaches that are more challenging in atrophic AMD, because once you lose your RPE, you lose your adjacent cell types. And so you'd have to give it before you lose central vision in our current understanding. So there are a number of other approaches beyond the complement cascade.
Mm-hmm. So in almost all the trials, the primary endpoint for assessing efficacy is a structural parameter, which is the lesion size growth, the atrophy lesion growth over time. How do you see our toolbox of functional tests fit to test efficacy in this respect?
So one of the challenges we've been aware of for a long time is our current conventional toolbox we have in a busy clinic will not capture the visual dysfunction in an easy way that our patients complain of. We're so used to high contrast central visual acuity with neovascular AMD fluctuating rapidly. Most patients with geographic atrophy, where it's extraorbital, their central high contrast visual acuity won't be affected. And so your visual acuity will be stable until the atrophy hits the center. But when you have parafoveal atrophy, depending on where it is, will affect your reading speed, but in quite a variable way. And as the atrophy enlarges, it will affect your visual field, a bit like our glaucoma patients or patients with CMV retinitis. So we need to capture the patient's visual dysfunction in appropriate ways. And such other ways of doing that is, in research trials at least, microperimetry. So microperimetry is a way of looking at the sensitivity of localized areas of the macula. And we know when in an area of geographic atrophy, there's reduced sensitivity. And so it just kind of supports what we already know, that the atrophy reflects dysfunction. And we hope with enough evidence, the regulators in Europe, like in the States, will eventually just accept the atrophy itself enlarging as a proxy for loss of function, just like we accept CMV retinitis enlargement as a dysfunction unto itself.
Fair enough. So now that we have treatment options on the horizon, obviously, how do you talk to your patients about these upcoming therapies? How do you manage perhaps expectations?
So quite often the patient will come in and say, I've lost vision in one eye. What's going to happen? So we have to manage expectations, because although we have two positive phase three trials and one therapy already having FDA approval, these are not yet licensed in Europe or the MHRA in the UK. And therefore I explain to them we have positive data that is encouraging that these drugs may be available in a year's time plus. but there's no guarantee of that currently, although we are hopefully likely to follow the US in getting these drugs to you. I explain how exciting it is that we finally have a treatment that slows down progression of the atrophic AMD, but also mention that it's not going to restore the damage that's done. If there is a rapidly expanding lesion and we feel they can't have access to the drug in the time it may hit the fovea, we will explore whether or not there's an appropriate research trial that may be of interest to them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So today we discussed many important considerations for the management, also for diagnosing following patients with atrophic AMD, as treatment options are becoming available. Early diagnosis, as well as a good understanding of disease biomarkers that are telling and predictors of disease progression to geographic atrophy, and in the presence of geographic atrophy, predictors for faster or slower growth is obviously key. Now, thank you so much, Adnan, for joining, and we hope that the Retina IMI video interviews will improve our and your ability to effectively diagnose and manage patients with these phenotypes of age-related macular disease, and hope to see you next time for the coming Retina IMI video interviews. Goodbye.
Bye.
Well, there was a lot to learn from that discussion on the emerging treatment options for geographic atrophy. Our thanks to Professor Holtz and Professor Tufel for their clear explanations of such technical issues. Our thanks also to Apelles and Roche for their support of this Retina Independent Medical Education podcast. In case you missed it, in part one of this series, Professor Holtz and Professor Tufel covered key considerations in diagnosis of geographic atrophy. We hope you'll join us again for the other podcasts in the 2023 Retina Independent Medical Education podcast series, which also include discussions on neovascular AMD and DME treatment.